Next case for argument, United States versus Diaz Jimenez. Mr. Holtzman.
You were impeded.
Yes, I think I've lost my audience.
I'm wondering about this. They called your name and everyone is running out of the court,
stampeding
you.
Good morning, Justices. My name is Michael Holtzman. I represent the appellant, Luis Diaz-Jimenez. And the issue in this case is really, as the court well knows, whether there is a substantial and material breach in the plea agreement based on the statements of the prosecutor at the plea hearing. We are alleging that, yes, there was a substantial breach, even though the prosecutor retracted his statement, which I believe in an ineffectual way, in a way that couldn't unring the bell, that couldn't stop the damage that had already been done by him recommending very forcefully, not just in a bland or reference to another document, but in a forceful way, asking for the high end of the guidelines, asking for 24 months in prison, which is the high end of the guidelines, giving reasons for that recommendation, which were later adopted by the judge.
Now, of course, the court wasn't bound by the prosecutor's recommendation. You know, if the defendant had bargained for a particular sentence, I really would have had no trouble whatsoever calling this a material breach. But he bargained for a non-binding recommendation. So given the nature of the bargain, how was this mistake material to the plea agreement, do you think?
Well, he bargained for a low-end sentence.
He bargained for a low-end recommendation.
What's that?
He bargained for a low-end recommendation.
Yes,
right?
Not with the court,
the
obviously.
Question.
Right, but with the government.
Mm-hmm.
And the government immediately, when he was asked by the court what they'd recommended, they recommended a high-end sentence in the direct contravention of the plea agreement.
But I think your stronger point is what he said when he retracted, when he said, I suppose that a larger sentence could be appropriate.
Right. I mean, it was
that I think is pretty damaging.
Yeah, I think that the government attorney made a pretty good attempt to try to recover after his, and I believe it was an inadvertent mistake, but it didn't work. He basically said, "I agree, Your Honor, that saying it might be appropriate is not an affirmative recommendation of 18 months," and he didn't. He tried to recover. But you can't, the damage had been done. So I guess our argument is there was a material and substantial breach. And the case
is. What kind of weight either Judge Randa or judges in general give to recommendations by the U.S. attorney?
Well, clearly that depends.
Sort of pattern here? Or?
You know, that depends on the situation. In this case, I believe that he gave substantial weight to this recommendation because the judge, when he made his decision giving a mid-range recommendation, he didn't give the high end not because of anything that was said by the it was given because he wanted to avoid cost to the prison. He said that if I put him in for the high end, there'd be more additional cost to the prison system. So he didn't. He only mitigated his sentence to a mid-range because of that. But we were asking for the low end. I think that the indication of his weight was the rationale of his decision. The only thing that the government said concerning this to argue for a high-end recommendation was that my client had gone back and forth across the border numerous times. Well, when the judge made his decision and gave the mid-range recommendation higher than the low end, that's what he referring to it as a great point. Highlighting that. The major thing that the prosecutor says in his one paragraph or two paragraph high-end recommendation, the judge adopts it. So I think he gave great weight to that. And I think if you look at the judge's decision, maybe I'm not sure how much, but a substantial section of it is devoted to that point.
Under Santabello, do we really have to parse out all those sorts of factors, though?
In terms of what weight the judge gave?
Yeah.
Well,
and
I think that's one of the issues.
Because Santabello was also non-binding, and it was retracted, and the Supreme Court said you got to go back, right?
Well, I think Santabello would talk about, would hold that this clearly is an error that requires a resentencing. In my view, I think, I don't know if you need to get to the issue of whether there's actual prejudice or the judge adopted this decision. I think the judge did, but I don't think we need to adopt a, as recommended by the government, a plain error standard. I think that there is enough here in the record in terms of the objections that were made by the trial counsel to raise the issue for the court. Maybe not artfully raised in terms of I object, and the trial counsel stood up and demanded a new sentencing hearing. That wasn't done. But the court was aware by an initial objection at the lower court level that, yes, there was a breach of the plea agreement. And, yes, it was a mixed recommendation. I'm not saying an enthusiastic recommendation is required, but more than a mixed, half-hearted, one minute we recommend this and tell our complete views, our real views, and then it comes, oops, we were caught. Let's go change the scenario and make it a low-end recommendation. So I don't think we need to raise some of those issues that as to whether there's prejudice or that this was key to the judge's decision. But if we do, I think that the facts would support a plain error indication or a plain error standard that this was a significant breach. This was not, according to, in the government's brief, they raised the Amico case. The Amico case, I believe, is dealing with an entirely different factual scenario from this case. In Amico, what you've got is a situation where there is a reference to a pre-sentence report before sentencing even occurred, in which it said, well, we agree with the pre-sentence report. Immediately after that was brought up, the prosecutor multiple times, both in writing and orally, said, we agree. We're going to correct this. They never got to court. They never got before a judge. They never recommended the breach. They never recommended 24 months or a specific time in prison in regards to this reference. It was totally corrected. In that case, a Second Circuit case, it was a minimal breach. It was a bland recommendation in breach of the plea agreement. But this is not. This is serious. I think this case more mirrors the, and I know I'm mispronouncing the name, but Kirkulier case from the First Circuit, which has been cited in a number of other cases, and quoting Santabello, it points out that Santabello's intent was never to allow a retraction. Now, there's some circumstances which may be a retraction if there isn't a breach, is helpful, but I think the majority of the cases, and I'm not sure there is a Seventh Circuit case that specifically addresses this kind of case, but I think the majority of the cases in the other circuits do indicate that this is a material breach. So what we're arguing for, Your Honor, is that my client be given a real fair shot at a sentence, that my client be given not to go back to a different judge, as the preference is in the various appellate circuits that have addressed this issue, for specific performance before a different judge, where the prosecutor would actually recommend what he was required legally, contractually, and constitutionally to do, which is recommend a low-end sentence.
If that happens, should we prohibit the new judge from reading the opinion?
He may do that. I would suggest that be the case, but whether that can be actually done, because I'm pretty sure judges in the district read each other's opinions. But
at least when I was on the district court, I always had the impression the Seventh Circuit at least expected me to read the slip opinions.
Yeah, well, if that's possible. But perhaps the court could craft an order which indicates that the judge should take no credence or credibility as to the any statements made in sentencing, and it'd be handled de novo. Whether that is practical or not, I don't know. But in any case,
would it be helpful if a different prosecutor appeared?
I don't think that the prosecutor is the issue, as long as he follows through with what he originally intended. I think this was not an intentional mistake, I believe, on the prosecutor. I think it was an inadvertent one. I think he, if you read his comments, he says, oops, you know, it's the wrong day, wrong time, wrong recommendation. You know, he didn't intend to do this, but that doesn't mitigate the problem with that it caused to my client. And I think,
what did he mean when he said he was wrong about the morning and the afternoon? Was that just joking, or?
I mean, it's not in the record, but I think it was a question of what court appearance he had. I think he was confused with his court appearances that day. He had one, and not severely. I mean, it was, he had one in the morning, and he thought it was in the afternoon. So maybe, I am not sure. Okay, but I think he was. It was more of a situation where I think he felt he was in. He realized that he gave the wrong recommendation for the wrong case, and it was not intentional. And I don't think his reasons for saying that have anything to do with.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Jacob.
Thank you,
Ms. Holzman. Mr. Holzman, sorry. Thank you, Mr. Jay. I guess I confused like
between
prosecutor. it's spreading.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. Michelle Jacobs on behalf of the United States. I'll just clear up the good morning afternoon thing right away. At page 2 of the sentencing transcript, that's why I looked at the clock, because I didn't want to make the same mistake. At page 2 of the transcript, the prosecutor says, "Good afternoon again, Your Honor." And then he says, "Or good morning again," meaning he thought it was afternoon and it was morning. And so then when he made his mistake, and I appreciate Mr. Holzman indicating that this was an inadvertent error. I mean, it's always hard on...
He confounded it, right? He shouldn't have said that. Yeah, higher sentence would be fine, too. Yeah, lower, higher.
Right. Well, I think what he was trying to get across, it was not an artful way to get it across. I think what he was saying is sort of acknowledging his error in making the argument, you know, that he had just made and recommending the high-end sentence. Then when
it's
the
as if he said to the judge, "Well, yeah, we recommend a low sentence. Of course, that doesn't bind you, and a higher sentence might be fine. So, you know, it's up to you, right?"
Well, if that's the way it's read, I think it is even more problematic. I think what he was trying to get across was when he said 18 months, it's still a significant period of time. In other words, I've been arguing that a significant period of time needs to be imposed to deter this defendant because he, in the last, I think it was about 6 months, had crossed and been returned to Mexico 5 or 6 times. And so that there needed to be some promoting for respect for the law and deterrent effect.
The larger sentence could be appropriate, but that is the least amount that is necessary to achieve the desired result. So
right.
To say 18 months is the least amount is really inviting the judge to say, well, I don't want to give the least amount that's necessary.
I think that he's saying under 3553, that is what the court is supposed to do, is to impose a sentence that is not greater than necessary to achieve the result. He is trying to reference...
Why did he say that? He says that's the least that's necessary.
To achieve the desired result. And I think
what
he's trying...
Look, that's not English. If I say... the least amount of time that we should grant for an argument is 10 minutes. I'm not saying that that's the right amount. I'm saying that's the least.
Mm-hmm.
So if another judge said, "Well, yeah, I think it should be 15 minutes," yeah, I said 10 was. I just said 10 was the least. I didn't say that was the optimal. So he's saying, in effect, 18 months is the least, and that's of course not the agreement he made. The agreement was to recommend 18 months.
To
recommend at least 18. That'd be a terrible recommendation, right?
Right. I don't disagree with you. But I think what, again, he clearly made a mistake. And I think what he was trying to get across.
He compounded his error with the at least, and I mean, it made it worse.
You know, I think that we have to look at this case in this way. What benefit was there to the defendant from the plea agreement other than the recommendation for a low-end sentence? Well, none. That's the primary benefit. If that's so, how can we characterize this as anything other than a material breach?
Well, you're certainly correct that that is a benefit that he's going to get. It is just the government's recommendation. The court did not adopt it. And I think what this case really presents is whether a retraction like this can ever cure a breach.
No. If he had said, "Look, you know, I'm confused. I confused Monday, and I confused the morning and the afternoon. I've confused this case with other cases. I forgot what the recommendation was. This is our recommendation, 18 months, period." That would have done it.
Yeah. I mean, in other words, we have to decide whether or not the correction was lip service. And it seems, you know, I mean, the retraction is completely different from the argument that was paid for a high-end sentence. And that's not fair.
Well, and if that's how the court reads the retraction, then I think it's going to go back, and I think it's going to go before a new judge, and that will be that. I think what the prosecutor, in fact, I know what the prosecutor was trying to get at was under 3553A, one of I can't think of the name of the clause, but that sort of that last clause that says the court should impose a sentence no greater than necessary to achieve the results in 3553A. And I think that's what he was trying to get at, to say, you know, I know that I recommended a longer sentence, but even 18 months.
I think you're right that that's what he's trying to say, but he didn't say it right, because to say at least X is necessary isn't to say that X plus Y wouldn't be better. That's the problem.
Well, and again, if that's the way that the court reads that, I think there is a problem. Now, the other problem with it is exactly what you, Judge Hamilton, pointed out, and that is the bell really can't in some ways be unrung here, because presumably any district court judge, new sentencing judge that's going to be presented with a case like this, if it were to go back, knows about this recommendation. And that's why in
the same could have been said in Santabello, right?
Well, not exactly, because in Santabello, they did not actually retract. As I understand Santabello, the defense objected to the, I think it was a maximum sentencing recommendation by that second prosecutor, and asked for an adjournment. And the court said, no, I'm not going to adjourn it because I don't really care what the government has to say. This is what I'm going to do.
But they still.
But the prosecutor never tried to correct the error, and in fact stuck by the maximum sentence recommendation. And it was only when the case went up that the government no longer took the position that they were, you know, not required to make. I think it was no recommendation at all is what was supposed to happen in Santabello.
See, in the next, if it comes before another judge, or even if it came, if it went back to Judge Randa, but, you know, probably another judge would be better, both you and Mr. Holzman would tell the judge, look, the prosecutor was not trying to repudiate the agreement. He was confused, and he would try to say that 18 months would be fine, but it was garbled, and therefore that judge was not given a clear impression that the government was committed to its agreement. But with that cleared up, another judge would not necessarily be affected by this. He just said it was a confusion. We start from scratch. Government recommendation: 18 months, no qualifications. And so I think a subsequent hearing could be fine.
Would be fair. And that may be. I just in briefing this and in thinking about these issues, I think that in cases like this, the best practice when this were, if this is to happen and there is a retraction, is to get a sense from the defendant, are you happy with the retraction? You know, is it enough? Because if Judge Randa had either imposed low end or had imposed the 12-month sentence that Mr. Holzman had recommended, we wouldn't be here. Or if Judge Randa had been asked at the very least to make findings on this issue, or for there to be an adjournment.
Yes, although it isn't challenged, a lot of what Judge Randa said in his sentencing was not appropriate. It was not appropriate.
And he actually cited the prosecutor's initial erroneous argument.
What I would say to that, Judge Rovner, and again, I appreciate the court's concern here. I really do. But you were going to hear, the defendant, one was going to hear from Judge Randa about promoting respect for the law regarding this defendant in any event, whether the prosecutor had said it or not. As I indicated before, he had crossed back and forth in and out of the United States, I think it was 5 times, before he was found in custody in Wisconsin. And so whether the prosecutor referenced that or not, I would be very surprised as a longtime prosecutor to read a sentencing transcript in a case like this and not hear the court at least comment on promoting respect for the law or deterring the defendant from committing the same crime again. He had done it 5 or 6 times and not been prosecuted, and it was only when he was found that he was prosecuted in federal court.
But is he a drug dealer, or is he a drug dealer?
I mean, he certainly wasn't prosecuted for that. I have to say, Judge Posner, I don't recall in the pre-sentence report
stuff
where
from
there's
Judge Randa, you know, about Canadians. We don't have problems with Canadians trying to get into the United States illegally.
Oh.
The richest man in the world is Carlos Slim, a Mexican man who controls Pemex.
Well,
what does that do for the average Mexican? There isn't the creative use of capital in Mexico. There isn't the freedom of their financial markets. Even though they've got just as many natural resources as the United States, they have more beautiful coastlines than the United States. Everybody wants to go to California in the United States, but Mexico tops California from a vacation point of view by 3 times. Now, what is that doing in a sentencing transcript? I say it's not challenged. But it does make one wonder about the possible impact of the prosecutor's error on the judge.
Well, and taking all that, if this court is inclined to remand, as I'm getting the feeling that it is, on an issue like this, in front of a different judge, we're not going to have that problem again. I mean, I think that he looks at these cases, and I'm sure the court is aware, he looks at drug cases and these immigration cases from a very, very sort of broad-based perspective on and local impact, but also sort of broad-based impact. And I know there have been some other cases recently where similar challenges have been made or issues have been raised.
But of course, this fellow is not being prosecuted for being a drug. Is it?
No, this was not a drug case. This was a 1326 case.
But
Ms. Jacobs,
he did mention the drug usage.
Yes, right. But whether he's a drug dealer is what I said. I'm not prepared
right.
to comment on.
But I would just like to add that I can understand why neither of you said to the judge, you know, Judge, none of what you're saying has anything to do with anything.
I wasn't there, but I also understand why he might not have.
Before you sit down, I just want to say I appreciate the professional candor in your brief.
Thank you very much.
Me too.
With that, I will be back in just a moment on the second case. Thank you.
Mr. Hulsman, do you have anything further?
Just a couple of quick things. I guess I agree with the court's view that the matter can be sent down fairly to another judge, but notwithstanding any potential problems, my client has a right for resentencing. There was a substantial breach. It wasn't corrected, if maybe even worsened. But to say that you just can't find a district court judge, so you shouldn't set it down for remand, would deny my client some fundamental rights. And just to clarify the other issue.
What did you just say?
To just deny a remand because we can't find a judge who hasn't read the slip opinion, I think would deny. I don't think that's what anyone's suggesting. The other point of clarification is. My client did have a history of drug use, but this had nothing to do with drugs. His only prior felony that made this a more aggravated offense was a car theft.
So he hasn't been prosecuted for being a dealer?
Oh, absolutely not. His only real serious prosecution was a car theft, and that's it.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Holtzman. You were appointed, were you not? Well, we thank you, and we thank Ms. Jacobs for your excellent arguments and those people who ran out. They missed the best arguments of the day, right?
With one to go.
Okay, our last.